Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Can you do some Power Ranger moves right here real quick?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was a karate chop.
Yeah,
that chair is going to be feeling that tomorrow.
I think your hand will too, man. You're not wearing the costume yet.
I have the strongest hands in this goddamn state.
You're going on record saying that. All right. Noted. I'm JP, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the U.S., distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. On today's episode, Punctured Piercing, Sketch Cabaret, and the Power Pot. Tattoo artist Casey Wardell has been running Punctured Piercing and Tattoo since 2007. He's one of the few owners of such stores in Davis County. He actively works with the county's health department to increase safety and health laws throughout the body arts community. Slug writer Brighton Metz sat down with Wardell to talk about the shop and his art.
Definitely one thing that I was really interested in was I saw that you were vegan friendly, and if you could tell me a little bit about how.
A lot of the pigments people use, they can be animal-derived as like the glycerin base in them. And glycerin comes from basically two sources, either a vegetable source or an animal source. All of our pigments, they use 100% vegetable glycerin. Also, the origin of where the black pigment can come from, it can come from bone black, which is basically charcoal bone dust that creates a black pigment. Ours are all vegetable-based. The best tattoo pigments in the world are almost always vegan. And so we're using high-end, very, very common tattoo pigments in like the more professional, better studios. We have a great track record with our tattoo pigments, and we hear it a lot when people come in. They're like, "Well, we use vegan ink. We heard that doesn't last." Well, the good studios are all using the same brand of pigments that we are. They're made by a very reputable manufacturer. They use sterile water in their process, so you don't have to worry about the non-tuberculosis microbacteria contamination that's recently been in the news for tattoo pigments. It's very safe and very good. Also, anything that we're using in like a cleaning chemical or like as a lubricant during the tattoo process is all animal free as well. So any kind of a vegan or vegetarian client can come in until you feel comfortable that they're not getting anything injected into them that they're not comfortable eating.
That's kind of news to me that they did like bone black and black inks and things like that. Just, it's nice to hear that there's someone out there who's, you know, really working against those things and those standards that kind of just become a common practice, you know. Kind of going along again with, you know, the safety of your shop. I read on the site that you would be doing the Davis Health Inspector's presentation.
It was actually the Utah Environmental Health Association.
Okay.
So it was the entire state of Utah.
Wow.
I got asked to come in and teach about proper studio inspection.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually had the opportunity to address 120 plus health inspectors about what to look for when they go into a tattoo studio. Most of these people have very little training on body arts. They're really good on like, you know, restaurants and, you know, tanning salons and
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. But when they come into a body art studio, they're basically just looking to see if they met the basic environmental criteria, like non-porous, you know, countertops and hot and cold running water in a hand washing sink. So a lot of what we covered was, you know, to check for expiration dates on pre-sterilized stuff, make sure that they're following proper, you know, protocols and how they're reprocessing equipment. Make sure that their equipment that they're using was designed to be used how they're using it. One of the biggest problems is people will go and buy an autoclave that's just an autoclave. And there's three different kinds of classes of autoclave. There's one that's specifically designed for flat, hard, simple objects that you're not going to be reprocessing or packaging. That would be a Class N autoclave. And that's what's really, really common in a lot of body art studios, because a lot of people in body art have very little training in proper equipment reprocessing. It's a really complex matter, and it's something that, knowing as much as I do about it, I don't feel comfortable doing it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why our studio is 100% disposable. Hopefully in the next little while, when tattoo or body art studios become inspected, the health inspector will be asking to see what kind of autoclave and if it's appropriate. There's Class B, which is like a vacuum-style autoclave, and then there's Class S, which is a special cycle autoclave. And those autoclaves are designed to sterilize hollow items. So like tattoo tubes, piercing needles, body jewelry that's semi-hollow, that kind of stuff is easily sterilized in those kind of autoclaves. And you should be asking when you go get stuff work done from someone, what class of autoclave they have, or if you want to see their autoclave, and if it, you know, doesn't seem like it's appropriate, you probably shouldn't get work done there.
And that's probably something that just, you know, health inspectors never would have even thought about or delved into.
Yeah, and there are autoclaves that are meant to vulcanize rubber, and they're giant, crazy autoclaves. And I'm sure if they, you walked into a body art studio and they have like a 4 foot wide autoclave, you'd think that was a little weird. But a lot of the health regulations specifically just say autoclave. And so they could have the wrong class of autoclave and still be in compliance and still totally be running a body art studio, but they could be putting people at risk. And so what we're trying to do is just basically close those gaps and make it so it's safer for everyone.
Charity, working with breast cancer patients, and I've also heard that donated tattoos to breast cancer patients. So if you could just tell me a little bit about that.
We put ourselves in a position where we have the opportunity to help people and put our time and our effort towards something that's probably better than just trying to make a dollar off someone. Mm-hmm. And so in the past, we've done stuff with breast cancer. A friend of ours ended up getting breast cancer for the third time, and she already had a double mastectomy, and it was just really, you know, super depressed about her situation. And so what we did is we had a weekend where we did body piercing with pink anodized titanium jewelry, and we did breast cancer ribbons, and we raised over $1,000 to give to her. And it was really easy and really simple, and the community and the, you know, body art enthusiasts and people who were kind of connected to this person really kind of came together, and it was a really good thing. We're going to do another charity event next month or so that's probably going to go towards either pancreatic cancer or breast cancer. We haven't really pinpointed where we want to go with that. We've also done, you know, some really simple fundraisers to help people that we know with, like, medical expenses. A friend of ours' daughter chopped off part of her finger, and she was in the primary children's for a couple weeks, and so we did a leech tattoos to raise money to help, you know, cover some of her medical costs. The reason we chose a leech is because they use leeches to basically pull blood through the part of their finger that was amputated. And it helped bring that end of their finger back to life. And it's what worked out really nice. And so there's, you know, 10 to 15 people running around with leech tattoos that totally helped that family out a lot.
Yeah, definitely. And kind of cool little, like, meaning behind it, too. Not just, like, free cat tattoos or whatever.
Punctured Piercing and Tattoo is located at 2459 South Main Street in Bountiful. To find out more about the shop in Wardell, visit them online at puncturedpiercing.net. Odium Totus, Latin for Hatred of the Whole, is a black metal band from Salt Lake City that formed in the fall of 2011. This month, the band released their debut album, Nullum Conque Nihil. From that album, here's Kairos Symbolorum. That was Odium Totus with Kairos Symbolorum. They're holding a release show at Bar Deluxe October 19th with Blood Purge, Deathblow, Moon of Delirium, and the show is just $5 and it starts at 10. For more info on the band, visit them online at facebook.com/odiumtotus. Sketch Cabaret is a monthly burlesque sketch night held in Salt Lake City. Started by Suspension Lounge founder Veronica Lynn Harper over the summer of 2012, this evening allows artists to draw performers as they pose and perform at a local club. Slug writer Alex Springer sat down with Harper in the Soundwave studio to talk about the event.
Your resume is awesome. Like, you do video game design, art, tons of stuff. Tell us a little bit about you and your experience getting started into the creative arts.
So I guess my background is more of fine art, traditional art, but then I got into video games and film. I'm a senior character artist at EA currently in Salt Lake City. They moved me here last year from San Diego. I've been in games about 8 years now, and it's been a lot of fun. Mostly character design or concepts. Right now in Salt Lake, we're working on The Sims, so I get to virtual fashion designs for characters during the day, which is a lot of fun. So
that's very cool.
I do all these other side projects with some awesome friends that I've met here. I've done a lot of shows in San Diego for artists in video games and film. We used to do 3 a year, so it's open internationally, so we'd have people send in pieces from France or from Israel that are in games and film that would do a custom piece for the show. So I kind of brought that here within the last year, probably starting in like January or so, really getting to know the people here and coming up with programming that works for this area.
Suspension Lounge, which sounded to me kind of reminiscent of Andy Warhol's Factory, like studio. Can you tell us what it's all about?
The inspiration. I mean, if you're around artists and, you know, artists, musicians, and that's kind of what your house turns into, really. You know, it's just a space for creatives, and that's kind of how all of that got started. You have parties or different events, and, you know, just people kind of doing their own thing still at a party where there's people either playing music or, you know, reading poetry, or somebody singing in a corner, or people are drawing in a corner, or there's just people sitting outside, you know. So it started to grow into something that was a lot bigger and a lot more people wanted to come. So we kind of got a name for it and had sketching more of a focus of those groups and hangouts, and then had our friends come out just to entertain the people that were sculpting instead of playing the radio or something. So it just kind of evolved itself into that, to where we had about 200 people at the house and then decided to get a venue. So, and that was over the last probably 4 or 5
years. When the house gets too small.
Needed a space for all of these people. So
it sounds like it's a very like collaborative environment. So I was wondering if there's any Utah locals that you've enjoyed working with or that have kind of participated in that.
It's great because it touches every background. So, I mean, I've been in games and film for 8 years, so I bring that whole aspect of all those designers out, but there's also street artists that come out that, you know, do graffiti type work that want to still learn how to figure sketch and things like that. But you're rubbing elbows with people of all walks of life, you know, which is what's really exciting, and students and stuff out too.
Getting into Sketch Cabaret as part of the gallery stroll, what could attendees expect when they show up? Like, can you tell us a little bit about Sketch Cabaret?
The venue we're using right now is Mix downtown in Salt Lake. We basically take over the entire space. We have 5 model stands that are set up throughout the nightclub. So, and these models are posing in full costume. And I don't do themes. I usually let those performers bring to the table whatever best suits their character and their persona. I think, like, you know, and that's the same with actors and things like that. That way, when you're an artist, they're not pushing themselves. They're really just becoming an alter ego of what they are. So I let them kind of creatively bring that to the table. We have those set up. I have a main stage area where we have live musicians or poets that can come up and talk. And I also have DJs throughout the night. So it's like 5 hours of inspiration, creativity, drawing. It's all local. Everybody's in it is local from every different background. We have ballerinas from like Ballet West, and we also have other performers that are maybe like burlesque or do belly dancing. So it's every different background, but it's all set in a very classy tone. So
nice. And it's a very unique idea when I was reading about it, that idea to like merge fashion and drawing and art. How did you come up with that? Like, what was the
It started with, I mean, the people that would come over to the house that I started to become friends with, I mean, not only did just one thing. Like, if I met someone who was a ballet dancer, they were also a designer, they made earrings, or they did this different thing. Or even with me, I work for a game studio, but I'm also an artist. I can sculpt and, you know, and I enjoy all this other stuff. So it's like bringing those backgrounds, and someone was like, well, can I put my jewelry on the model that's posing? And I was like, that's actually a good idea, you know?
That's cool.
Then I'm able to show local fashion designers, or even people who have antique shops or different things, would be cool for them to bring in a prop or something that they would donate. We could feature them in the show, and it's like all of these different parts come together.
Is it just you that was it? Like, who helps you?
My fiance and I. And then we have a team of really awesome friends
that
are totally stoked to build things, put things together, even the models and stuff too. But we not only put on this show, but we're also a figure model agency for different studios and schools here. So, like, I run the figure drawing program at Electronic Arts, and our models also are booked for, you know, slots at Disney, BAU. We're going to work with the Art Institute soon, and slowly getting into all of these different colleges and schools in town, and then into Park City. Really giving them figure models that are trained. So once a month, privately, for, you know, other people interested or performers interested in learning how to model. We usually train performers because they're gifted with that flow. You know, a model has that straight kind of sterile type pose, where performers remember to follow out emotion all the way through to their fingertips, you know, so they have that natural flow, but we have to teach them how to hold that still, and tricks of the body to, you know, kind of mentally escape and be able to hold that for 20 minutes or 40 minutes. So I rather work with performers to train, and then we, you know, we give some of the top universities and studios in town some of the best models they've ever had, which is, it's been a really cool, fun concept, because it's nowhere in the world, and it's kind of just something that we've evolved into something pretty great. So we hope to travel and stuff with it. And then our age range is just 21 to whatever age. So we have a guy in his 60s that comes out and that poses and stuff.
That's really cool.
You know, that has he makes all his own leatherware and costumes and different things. And he's been an actor and a performer for years. So.
Well, and again, just the opportunity to meet people like that. Is just,
Yeah, your conversations won't be boring.
that's
for sure.
That's great. Yeah, and you've also mentioned that there's going to be like musicians, DJs, like, for, I guess, for this year, any notable, like, or I guess who's performing, who's DJing, any bands that you've got?
Everything is local, so they're all your top local DJs. Yeah,
really?
I promote local, it's all local.
That's
maybe next year, I have other programs and stuff that I'm doing, like, through Pixel and stuff, that'll bring in outside talent, you know. But I have all those connections from living out in California for a while, but I really want Utah to appreciate what's here, and I want to learn and understand what's here before bringing something, you know, kind of doing showcases with outside talent. We should kind of show what we have here in our city first to be proud of.
Yeah, that's a really cool concept, because I do think that Utah's artistic community, it's big.
Huge.
And I don't think people don't associate that right away.
It just needs to be brought together, and that's what these different events are for. So
that's great, because it is I think it's something that needs to happen. So
because they had Gallery Stroll for I don't even know how many years, but I'm paying attention the last year quietly. There's no after party for it. There's no collective group. There's no end to that. It's just people walk around, do this great, you know, stroll, and it's over. So we decided to just drop it on that night, and it's actually gone really well.
Right. Do you feel that music kind of enhances the performance as a whole?
I mean, I just enjoyed it at the house because we'd play with it. But the other thing that's great, as I noticed, is that, you know, if you have a husband or wife that's not an artist, you know, and they still want to enjoy a great time with you, they can still come out and have a great time watching the performers or listening to the music or dancing while you're able to draw. So it kind of gives that to everybody.
each month, do you like stick to a particular theme, or do you try to come up with a different one for each month? So it's just show up.
There's no themes. You'll go and you'll draw Bear, and he'll be in a pirate costume. That's a 60-year-old guy. Or you'll walk to another one, and there'll be a belly dancer, or there'll be like an old school, like Marilyn Monroe. I let the performers bring the personality that, which challenges them too, as a creative. You know, if I'm just going in and constantly directing, if you need to wear this, it gives them that creative outlook that they actually look forward to something, and they have to really think of, oh, what can I bring to the table? Right. What do I have in me as a person that I can really showcase and be, and have an artist actually feel it and then be able to draw it? So I allow them to bring that.
That's very good. And I imagine the results are better than you would have expected.
It's a lot of fun. Like, because I never. It's like Christmas kind of, because you get there and they have all these costumes. They're like, you don't know what they're gonna bring. Right. But I mean, these are people that are on our team. It's not just I don't just hire random models. There's 107 members with our group, and they all know each other. And then we have meetups once a month that they have to come out to for demos and a lecture of, you know, and then we kind of watch, I guess, how far in the game they are with how capable they are. You know, can they hold a 45-minute pose, or can they hold a 10-minute pose, you know, and then just their whole structure and how, you know, they are as a model. So it started from, like, you know, I would go to figure drawing classes, or when I first started at EA, I was going into drawing classes, and I'm like, oh, God, you know, I'm drawing somebody who's just sitting here or just standing here. I've been friends with performers a lot of my life and them around me, so I draw more of a cartoon-esque type style. I need that emotion to draw from, and when we would have figure drawing classes, it was just so static, and I gave my friends kind of that chance to come in, you know, and help train them, and I think it'll change the way of figure drawing, and it's kind of cool to start that in Salt Lake.
I would think that people in the same boat who are looking for a little bit more of a I don't know, a challenge or something unique, that drawing, like, for motion, that almost gives it a whole new dimension, so.
And then our stations are set up where we have 1 to 5 minute poses, we have 15 to 30 minute poses, and then we have a section for, like, hour poses. So if you're a painter and you want to come out for a long pose, you'd go in a certain area, and then the models change. So there's about 20 models in each show, so they're shifting all the time.
So with attendees, now I know that you've got people that are sketching and things like that. Do they, like, can attendees buy sketches from
sometimes
artists?
Sometimes the artists don't even want them.
Oh, really?
We've also done, we're doing a benefit show tomorrow, actually, with Ulysses. We do a couple of those throughout the month, and it's for the homeless youth. We have artists that are just sitting drawing, and they might just give them away to whoever. If you go up and talk to somebody and say, I love that, could I please have it? They might hand it to you. I'm also going to feature a small art wall showcase so that artists can show some past work and stuff to you pretty soon, which will be neat. And then those can be for sale, and the artists will keep 100% of the sale, like the shows I've done in San Diego. So
cool.
The next Sketch Cabaret takes place this Friday, October 19th, at Mix. The event will run from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. Tickets are just $20, and students get in for $15. For more info on the event, check out suspensionlounge.com. It's time once again for our weekly daily calendar rundown with Slug Junior Editor Alexander Ortega. Thanks for joining us, Alex.
Hey, JP. Thanks for having me.
I am very excited about this week. You've done a great job with the roundup of events. Why don't you start off with one of my favorite UK groups that's coming to town, if you don't mind.
Right. Well, Tuesday, October 16th, The XX is playing at The Complex. John Talbot Live and 254 are opening for them. The XX is a rad indie kind of dream pop band from England, as you said. They have really, like, soft electronic sounds and male and female vocals. And they just released a new album last month in September. And it's about the same thing as their debut, at least from my standpoint, which is a good thing. When I worked at Pibb's Exchange, the XX were a common band we played in the shop, and they're good underground music that at the same time is really accessible, I think, for a lot of people.
I agree. I got the chance to see them in California, and they were really amazing. I'm sure people here are going to love them if they haven't seen them yet. They've been waiting with bated breath for, I don't know, 2 years now since that album came out, waiting to see them, so they're well worth the wait, I would say.
They put on a good show?
Oh, yeah. Very true to the album. you know, stripped down, not too crazy, just solid rock and roll with a weird ambient edge to it, you know?
Yeah, just come and they bring it, and people bask in the ethereal qualities.
You just bask in the Dos Equis is what the kids are calling them.
Ah, okay. No,
nobody
the
calls
Dos
them
Equis.
That. I was just saying. That's really dumb. Sorry, can we move on?
I guess. I mean, I was going to leave. I
kind of ruined it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, let's let's cleanse the palate with Thursday, okay. October 18th. Rabbits from Portland are playing
at Ye Old Burt's Tiki Lounge. And actually, just barely heard of them. I was on Spotify. It was like one of the suggestions that the application gives you, and I'm kind of surprised I haven't heard of them before. They recently released their album, Bites Rights, on September 28th, and I would describe them as being like Red Fang plus Coliseum. They have that heavy, sludgy sound of both, but they both retain like a hint of melody from kind of like the Red Fang side, but like the sort of hardcore avant-garde song-building structure and song-building techniques of Coliseum. And they're going to be playing with slug writer Gavin Hoffman's band, Invaders, and a local favorite, Oldtimer.
That's going to be a good show right there.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what.
I want to go to that.
I do as well. You will go for me?
Yes, I will.
Drink a shot of whiskey and a PBR in my name and honor. Just do it privately. Don't make a big thing out of it. Go in the corner.
I'm actually going to stumble drunkenly on stage and be like, hey, I'm doing this, but it's actually on behalf of JP.
It's memoriam.
Yeah.
Thanks. You'll be kicked out. You'll be kicked out. I hope not. Well, you've played that venue before with your band, right?
Yeah.
I'll be like, oh, Alex is just on stage, just doing what he does.
Right.
There's Ortega, as they say. And Friday, October 19th, I'm actually really excited about this one. I'm not gonna blow my load on it, as it were. Will you please tell everyone what's going on?
Yep. On Friday, October 19th, Gaza will be headlining a local show at the Shred Shed, and they're playing with post-hardcore Eons and hardcore act Fever Dreams. And this is actually Gaza's album release show of No Absolutes and Human Suffering, which I haven't actually picked up yet, but I'm planning on it. I've heard a little bit in the office, and it's really good. So I'll definitely be at that show on October 19th, to make no mistake.
Gaza's really good. I'm just going to say that.
Yes.
Love Gaza.
I don't think anybody would disagree with you on that. That's an absolute in the human condition, is that Gaza's really good. And if you haven't heard of the Shred Shed yet, it's a new all-ages venue located on Exchange Place in downtown, across the street from the Heavy Metal Shop, and it's in the former location of Artopia. And it's really cool just for me to see that there's, again, a legitimate space for local and national bands that will likely be more of the aggressive ilk, so to speak. I'm really excited about it, and of course Gaza always kills it, and I've never seen Eons or Fever Dreams, but they're definitely on my list. Their Facebook recordings sound really great, so they should all put on a really great show, synergistically good show.
As it were. And also on October 19th, Anime Banzai will be at the Davis Conference Center in Layton. What is an Anime Banzai?
Well, apparently, it's a 3-day event celebrating all things anime and more. I'm not too familiar with it either, but it's happening, and it sounds like, you know, a lot of the people that are into comics and kind of roleplay, things like that, can go and check this out, and you can learn more about it if you visit animebanzai.org for more info on events. It's animebanzai.org.
Can I just bring up one of my favorite events of the fall season?
What's that?
In terms of weird shit, Saturday, October 20th, it's an October evening. That's at the Masonic Temple. And that's a crazy place to go to. However, there's something interesting going on there. But it's got a great energy and a vibe. Will you tell us what's going on at the Masonic Temple?
Right, well, an October evening is showcasing of sorts of different Halloween and spooky themed things that people are presenting, such as scary themed films, a conceptual fashion show, and aerial and dance performances, plus some surprises they are saving for us. And so it seems like it's just going to be an all-around fun event. And make sure you check out our feature in this month's issue by the lovely issue.
Have you ever been to the Masonic Temple?
Yes. It's really cool. There's on the walls, like, it's just decorated with all the ornamentations and their symbols and what have you. I don't really know the proper name for them, but it's a very otherworldly place to visit.
I know the name for them. They're LDS temple symbols.
Initially, they were Masonic symbols.
Yeah.
And then they put them on the temple.
Yes, this is correct, Alex.
Yeah, last but certainly not least, Converge will play at Urban Lounge on Monday, October 21st with a quote-unquote openers, because they're not really just openers, Torch. Like, they're touring with Torch, or as you like to call them,
Torche.
Right. And also what's referred to as party black metal, the band Kvelertak. And I'm super excited for this show, and maybe somewhat close to being as excited as Slug contributing editor Ricky Vigil. Our cover story is on Converge's new album, which Ricky wrote. And it's a really beautiful album in its own right, as a hardcore album, or chaotic hardcore, or avant-garde metal, or whatever you want to call it. It's Converge is Converge, you know? And for me, strikingly different than their previous work. Also, I've really been turned on to Torch this year.
Torche.
Torche, is that how they say it in France?
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that's how you pronounce it anyways.
And, dude, calm along the whole thing, this. Kvelertak, party black metal, one whole heck of a mess of fun. Seriously, though, if you don't go to this, you're missing out. Just go.
Did you just do a Karl Malone impersonation?
Yeah. I channel Karl Malone sometimes.
Shit, and you can see that when you perform with the Filth Lords, right?
Yeah.
Anytime you're playing, you're channeling Malone.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little known fact about the group.
Yeah.
It's the main source of inspiration.
Right. I mean, I didn't even know this because I changed so much into Karl Malone that it took JP to tell me this.
You know what? I think we learned a lot. We got a lot of insight today about the human condition, about life and music, and I really appreciate your time here with us, Alex. Can you tell us where else we can find information about the daily calendar and how people can submit events?
Yeah, you just go to slugmag.com and go to the daily calendar on the right.
It's on the front page right there. So easy.
Yeah.
You can also find it on your iPhone. And there we have a Slug Mag app. It's called the Slug Mag app, appropriately enough. And you can get it. It's free 90 free, and all our content's on there. And you can listen to the podcast. You can do all sorts of stuff. Just mix it up. Thank you very much, Alex. Also,
JP.
Daily calendar at slugmag.com. That's where you email events to.
Exactly.
Yeah, you got to email that if you got an event. Oh, it's good. Thanks again. Thanks two times.
Thanks three times to you.
Oh, shit. She just got exponential up in here.
Yeah.
Cubing that shit.
Thanks cubed.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
We liked ODM Totus so much from earlier in this episode, we've decided to play them again. Here's another track from their recent release. This is None Are Equal. That was Odium Totus with None Are Equal. For more information, go to the aforementioned website we gave for those guys and check them out live. The Power Pot is a recent invention from a few inventors here in Salt Lake City. The pot ingeniously uses the heat it generates from cooking foods as an energy source to charge items like cell phones and digital cameras. The pot received funding from a successful Kickstarter campaign that helped mass produce the device. Slug writer Henry Glasheen sat down with creators David Toledo and Paul Slusser to talk about their invention.
What's your background in material science?
So we both work on electronic materials. We actually met in a lab up at the U called the Nanostructure Materials Laboratory, where we were doing materials research. And that's where we met, and also where I learned about thermoelectrics initially, and we got initial exposure to that.
Yeah, David was working on like a material system in relation to thermoelectric materials, and I was working on it with him, and we got curious. You know, it's like you do theoretical stuff and you beat your head into hard problems that maybe aren't worth solving, you know? And so you kind of want to see why the technology would be useful in the first place. And so we picked up some of the commercially available designs, stuff that's actually you can buy that's a thermoelectric system, and just played with them. So we bought these cooling modules off of eBay pretty much. That's the primary use for this technology.
Okay.
Is you're actually providing power, and that creates a temperature differential. And in the power pot, we run it in reverse, so we create a temperature differential and get power.
Huh.
And the technology works both ways. And so, needless to say, because we're using something that wasn't necessarily purposed for what we were using for, we broke stuff and we learned and so on and so forth. We finally came across it in our, you know, this is all in our free time. We're busy, free time, engineering students. So we didn't have, you know, occasional weekends and stuff to work on it.
What was the role that each one of you specifically played in creating the power pot? Was it more of a collaborative effort where both of you did everything, or were you guys specialized in the sort of things you did?
No, it was completely collaborative.
Okay.
Yeah, we just did everything together. We figured out all the design and materials and also the electronic side. Regulating the power has been a big challenge.
What's the biggest challenge about regulating the power?
It's mostly the fact that people don't use thermoelectric generators. Like, no one's ever heard of one before, so there's not a lot of literature or off-the-shelf electronics to deal with these kind of power sources. Unlike a battery or a solar panel where you can just go get a charge controller, that'll work with it just great.
Well, that would make sense. What initially spawned the idea of the power pot? I know you guys were working on the research.
Pretty much while we were tinkering with this technology just to get a feeling for it, we realized that it was, you know, practically useful in society today just because we have all these little electronics that we want to charge. And one big thing for us is like we go camping a lot, and if we want to listen to music around the campfire when you're sitting there for however many hours, it'd be nice to be able to do that. And we pretty much set out to just make some sort of useful generator using thermoelectrics, and then that led us to attaching it to the bottom of a pot because water is a great heat sink, and it just so happens that when water boils, it stays at one temperature, and when it evaporates at a boil, it takes a lot of heat with it, so it just works as a great on-the-go heat sink and just kind of makes it possible.
Yeah, and I mean, not to mention the ubiquity of having a pot around the campfire when you're going camping.
Exactly.
You funded the original idea using Kickstarter donations. What gave you the idea to use Kickstarter?
It's a friend of ours, Caleb Blight. He's also part of the Power Practical. He is an entrepreneur student at Utah Valley University, and he just knew Kickstarter was a good choice for us because you get upfront money and validation that your idea is worth, you know, pursuing. So that's right. What we needed.
How was your experience in working with Kickstarter?
It's great.
The Kickstarter community is really cool. It's a kind of a watch it grow sort of thing. See how it plays out. It's really an interesting thing to watch for sure right now.
And everyone's been really patient with us because, you know, things inevitably end up taking longer than it's expected.
Yeah.
But, you know, they appreciate that we've been working at making a, you know, quality product. That's the main feedback that we've got, is that they're not so worried. It took a little bit longer than expected, but the fact that it showed up and worked, people are really happy, so.
Excellent. You've more than doubled your set goal of $50,000. What does that mean for the Power Pot?
Pretty much means that we're gonna have a little bit of inventory to keep going for the next couple months.
Nice.
And then we'll see where we go from there.
Did you think you would meet your initial goal at the outset?
Absolutely, yes. We thought we were going to do better than our goal.
Yeah.
We planned on it.
We were hoping at making about $100,000. So, but we knew we needed 50 to actually do it. And if we'd raised too much more money, then being backordered 1,000 units is a lot of power pots to make. So.
Yeah, and given that you have to figure out how to make 1,000, given that you have never done it before. I mean, you've made 100. You know, you paid out of your own pocket to run a business for however long and make 100 of them, then the Kickstarter backing was huge, absolutely crucial. We've had a lot of support since then from people who've, like, that's kind of the biggest kick of Kickstarter, is that it gives you some prominence and, like David said, validation. People want it. So we've seen people coming from our Kickstarter page and buying PowerPots on our website, which is makes sense. Kickstarter's a great platform for this kind of an idea where it needs money to get off the ground, but don't know if anyone really wants it yet. Not really. I mean, we thought it was going to do it, yes, at the outset, but we didn't know.
Right.
Until you do it.
So tell me about the models you currently have, the V and the X.
The PowerPop V is a V's Latin numeral for 5, and it's a 5-watt generator. And then the X is a 10-watt generator. The 5 is a backpacking pod, and the most practical in the sense that you can carry around and use it wherever to charge the vast majority of electronic devices. And then the X is more of like a premium model for if you want to use on a home stove, you know, it's a nicer pot and it puts out a bit more power. You don't need it if you're trying to charge a small device and you just want to charge it. You don't need to use as much fuel because you have more power conversion capability.
Your next project, the VX, is more powerful. I would assume it's a 15. But what do you think its capabilities would be like just beyond that? I mean, is it more of like a...
So you're starting to get into some legitimate amount of power, you know. That's a fairly, a 10-watt solar panel is a pretty big panel.
Mm-hmm.
And so the 10-watt, or the 15-watt power pod is into the range where you can start charging bigger batteries, like laptop batteries, for instance. And so that's probably the prime application of a bigger power pod, is being able to charge a laptop-sized battery.
And then a big reason we put up on Kickstarter is because it needs a little bit more development, as you said. And we got a sense from some of the nonprofits that we're working with that in Africa that's more the size pot they need for cooking actual meals. And not only that, it also could, you know, potentially become a sustainable business for whoever had it, because they would be supplying power to multiple people. It's like in Uganda, you know, they'll cook for 4 hours for 10 people or something. So you could charge a lot of cell phones during that time if you had a 15-watt generator.
You've mentioned it a little bit now, but tell me about your bigger ambitions for the Power Pot, specifically its applications for people in developing countries.
In this country, it's a useful accessory for your camping, you know, adventure or whatever. But in a developing world where part of the developing world where you don't have an electrical grid, people will walk miles and spend money to charge a device. There's already a need. Definitely market demand for it. So, you know, that's what we ultimately want to do, is help people make their lives easier, better. And like David said, some of these larger models actually present economic opportunity for someone who owns one, so that they can actually charge their neighbor's devices or batteries, just one big battery that they charge other batteries from, or something like that.
Right.
As a business, where they actually could see a return on the investment of buying it initially.
Wow.
And then another big part of it is just, you know, trying to make a stride towards some state of personal energy independence. Like, you know, innovative generators is ultimately where we're going to have to move towards if we're going to, you know, have a huge population at our standard of living as far as energy concerns are concerned. So a lot of these nations, which, you know, we're sending power pots to, they don't have a grid that's anything compared to ours, and they probably never will, because it won't actually make economic sense to build a grid in the fashion that we have.
To purchase a power pot, find more info and see other products from the creators. Visit them online at thepowerpot.com. Thanks for listening to Sound Waves from the Underground. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. What metal songs or albums do you like to rock out to during All Hallows Eve? We've got another Metal Roundtable episode coming up just in time for Halloween, and we want to hear your thoughts about scary music and metal. Scary and haunting metal, let's say. You can either send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our voicemail line at 858-233-9324. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan, with associate producers Esther Moronio, Ricky Vigil, Alexander Ortega, and JP. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. Our main logo and art design is by T-Done, and technical design by Kate Colgan. On next week's episode, Monica Campbell, a beer chat with Mike Riddell, and POS.